11. Boom. Only 6 enemies remained, 4 men and 2 women, to oppose Yeoman Carr. One of them was up on the tower now, wearing a full enviro suit and trying to reattach the disconnected junction box. It wouldn't matter, Yeoman Carr knew. The molecular plague had swept by X-Gal 4, had rolled over nearly all of Belkaden, and the toxic gases and swirling yellow and green clouds were too thick now, and too tumultuous, for them to get any message off-planet. When the truth of the devastation had become evident, the remaining scientists had scrambled to ready the small freighter for liftoff. How easy it had been for Yeoman Carr to sabotage the already dilapidated craft, rubbing wires together so that their rotted insulation disintegrated, causing shorts or pulling the connector plates right over rusted bolts. The scientists had quickly abandoned any hope of fleeing and instead focused on getting out a distress signal. But they were too late. The death of Garth Bryce and their trust in Yeoman Carr had sealed their fate. Now the clouds and poisoned gases had caught them, and though the buttoned-up X-Gal station could be self-sustaining in the oxygen-depleted air, they were trapped. Mon calamari juggerhead fish in a barrel for Yeoman Carr's harpoons. The Yuuzhan Vong warrior casually walked out of the compound, wearing his starfish breathing adapter, for he could not bring himself to trust the mechanical breathing apparatus of the enviro suits. Quite comfortable in the devastation his beetle friends had wrought, he moved to the base of the tower and looked up, barely able to see the worker through the thick haze. "How are the repairs going?" he yelled, his voice watery sounding because of the mask. "I got it," came the cry from above, a woman's voice. "One more connection." Yeoman Carr pulled the small axe from his belt and chopped down hard on the exposed piece of cable at the base of the tower, severing it cleanly. Then he replaced the axe and waited calmly, basking in the noxious haze of his glory. A few minutes later, Lysira Donabella, one of only 2 females left alive on Belkaden, came down the tower. "It'll work now," she explained, as she reached the bottom and began extracting herself from the safety harness and lengths of cord. "Just a connector," she started to explain, and then she turned about and froze, eyes wide behind her visor, as she regarded Yeoman Carr and his living aerator. Yeoman Carr held his hand out, motioning toward the new break in the line. Lysira stared at it for a long moment, her visor fogged with her heavy breathing. She looked back at Yeoman Carr, shaking her head in disbelief. And then she bolted, rushing right past the alien. He kicked her trailing foot behind her lead ankle as she passed, and in the same fluid movement grabbed the airline at the back of her helmet and tore it free. Lysira sprawled face down on the ground. Yeoman Carr's foot stepped down on her back, holding her firmly in place. Lysira wriggled frantically, gasping for breath as the yellow fumes slipped under her protective gear. Somehow, in her desperation, she broke free, crawling up to her knees, then regaining her footing. Yeoman Carr could have caught her, and easily, but he did not, recognizing from her stagger that he had already won. Lysira wobbled and swayed. Her line to the compound door was far from straight. She staggered the last few steps and fell forward, crashing against the portal. Her hands moved, a feeble attempt to find the door's release, for her senses were almost completely gone by then. Yeoman Carr didn't make a move, didn't have to. He watched her slump against the door. Then he stood beside her, off to the side, just looking out at the roiling clouds and thickening fumes. A half hour slipped by. The 7 scientists had buddied up for safety, 2, 2, and 3, and while Yeoman Carr's 2 partners thought he was sleeping in his private chambers, Lysira's partner knew that she had gone outside. It came as no surprise to Yeoman Carr then, when the compound door started to open. Lysira Donabella slipped down to the side. "Lysira!" came her partner's cry, the woman falling to one knee beside her. She glanced up then, apparently noting the movement, and her eyes went wide at the specter of Yeoman Carr, at the horror of watching Yeoman Carr's swiftly descending axe. There was something symbolic about killing the last female on Belkaden, the Yuuzhan Vong warrior recognized. The seal of victory, the symbol that the humans and other intelligent species of this galaxy had lost their first encounter with the Yuuzhan Vong. Yeoman Carr tore the axe head out of the woman's chest, let her fall right over Lysira, then moved through the door back into the compound. Only four enemies remained, and two of them, Yeoman Carr knew, were probably asleep. Gnome Anor wasn't comfortable at all, strapped in his seat, and with tons of unstable liquid explosives burning bright behind him. The Yuuzhan Vong executor, who had come in from another galaxy, had never feared spaceflight, far from it. But this primitive two-stage rocket from Romamul made even the ion drives of the more conventional craft look superb, and those Gnome Anor considered far beneath the glory and sophistication of his own species' living world ships and coral skippers. Beside him, Shock Tanakhtan seemed only marginally more at ease, gritting his teeth against the G-forces as the rocket zoomed into orbit. Finally, though, they leveled off. The first burn completed, and Shock went to work piloting the large, ungainly craft toward the waiting mediator. "They're hailing us," Shock explained to his leader a moment later. Gnome Anor held his hand up and shook his head. "Finish the course setting," he explained. Any delay in responding he could brush away with the difficulties of aligning such a bulky and unwieldy ship as this. The discussion with the mediator would come later, after he and Shock were safely tucked into their concealed A-wing. "She'll fly right by them," Shock assured him a moment later. Gnome Anor unbuckled from his uncomfortable chair. Shock did likewise. And the two crouched and crept through the cramped capsule, Gnome Anor pausing only to set the decoy in place in the pilot chair, utter a quick prayer to Yun Harla, the cloaked goddess, the trickster, and kiss one of his pet Villips goodbye. The Romamulian rocket broke orbit, streaking out toward the mediator and blasting its second-stage booster away. That booster rocket had never actually fired, though, for it wasn't needed and wasn't really a rocket, but was rather an empty shell with an A-wing cleverly tucked inside. From the enlarged cockpit of that A-wing, which had been modified to hold two pilots, Gnome Anor and Shock Tanakhtan watched the continuing plumes of the missile exchange between Osarian and Romamul. Starfighters from the mediator buzzed the atmospheres of both planets, particularly Osarian, trying to knock down as many missiles as possible. Some of those bombs were getting through, the executor noted as the shell rolled about, giving him a view of Osarian and the large red bruises that were thermonuclear blast clouds. No wonder, then, that his offer to Commander Akhdul to come to the mediator and negotiate fairly with the Osarians had been eagerly received. The booster shell rotated some more, and the great battlecruiser came into sight, dwarfing the Romamulian capsule speeding for it, despite the fact that it was much farther away. "Hold this line," Gnome Anor ordered. Shock tapped his thrust vector control jets, breaking the momentum of the roll and gently stabilizing the view of the mediator. "Open the channel." Shock nodded and remotely opened the comm channel on the distant capsule. The relay couldn't send the picture, the image of Commander Akhdul, to the A-wing, for that would have given the pair away. But Gnome Anor could picture the Mon Calamarian's face vividly, a phony smile of greeting stamped upon it as he issued all the expected diplomatic platitudes. "My greetings, Commander Akhdul," Gnome Anor said through his villip. The little creature, an exact likeness of Gnome Anor, sat atop the decapitated body that had been placed in the capsule's pilot seat, and relayed Gnome Anor's words with perfect inflection. Akhdul had barely begun his insincerely warm greeting when a group of craft swooped out from dark space, closing fast on the capsule. Akhdul cursed and ordered his fighters out, and Gnome Anor and Shock Tanakhtan heard a yelp of glee from somewhere in the commander's background. "The Jedi Knight," Shock Tanakhtan remarked. Gnome Anor nodded, thinking it perfectly ironic that the mediator's own starfighters would clear the way for the fake capsule. Shock Tanakhtan worked hard to keep both the mediator and the capsule in sight so that they could enjoy the spectacle of the mediator's starfighters intercepting and chasing away the Osarian Z-95 headhunters. "Your friends from Osarian do not seem interested in talk, Commander Akhdul," Gnome Anor said calmly. "Osa Prime is in flames," Akhdul came back, a slight crack showing in his cool diplomatic shell. We agreed to cease fire, Nome Anor said. You will be protected all the way into the Mediator and escorted back to Romamul after our discussion, Commander Akdul assured him, and from his formal tone alone, Nome Anor could guess that he had snapped to attention as he spoke. On my word. As you will, Nome Anor said, cognizant of the fact that his villip couldn't nod. Break up the screen, he quietly bade Shock to Nocton, and the man complied, rolling the channel back and forth so that the communications visual break seemed like a malfunction. Commander Akdul? Nome Anor's villip asked on cue, its tone full of trepidation. I hear you, Akdul's crackling voice replied. We've lost screen. The malfunction is here, I fear, Nome Anor said. I see nothing but Osirian ships, and I am without controls. I cannot evade them. Be calm, Nome Anor, Akdul replied. My starfighters will protect you. Indeed, watching from the shell, Nome Anor and Shock to Nocton couldn't help but smile as the Mediator's superior starfighters intercepted the Osirians and easily chased them away. One got a torpedo away, though, and only a brilliant maneuver by one X-Wing, breaking from the pack and intercepting the torpedo with a line of laser fire, saved the undefended capsule from incineration. Still, the shock of the torpedo blast sent the capsule off course and into a continuing roll. I never doubted you, Nome Anor said calmly. Akdul's ensuing pause was telling, confirmation that his apparent cool in the face of death had just elevated the commander's respect for him. Nome Anor almost wished at that moment that he actually was in the capsule, that he would be meeting with Akdul and the Osirians. Almost. Without controls, Nome Anor growled, I cannot even shut down my engines and cannot change course. To the tar pits of Alurion with you, Akdul, you promised sanctuary. We'll get you, Commander Akdul assured him. A moment later, the capsule abruptly halted its roll, and despite the fact that its engines were still firing and it was pointed at an angle that ought to have taken it far from the Mediator, it began drifting in toward the great ship. Tractor beam, Shock to Nocton explained. Those engines on the capsule will do nothing to hinder it. They'll pull her in and hold her until they can shut her down. Nome Anor smiled and watched, not even bothering to answer Akdul's continuing calls to him as the capsule, flanked by starfighters, approached the Mediator. The A-wing jolted, and the shell started to turn. We're bouncing along the atmosphere, Shock to Nocton explained. Nome Anor glanced at him, and poor Shock worked doubly hard to keep the Mediator in view, fearing the consequences if the Executor did not witness this moment of glory. The capsule disappeared into the Mediator's lower docking bay. Shock to Nocton reopened the visual channel. Boom, Nome Anor said, smiling at Shock. Boom, Nome Anor's villip echoed to Commander Akdul. The nuclear fission explosives packed into the shuttle detonated, vaporizing the entire section of docking bays, blowing out a huge section of the lower floor of the great battle cruiser, issuing a shock wave and a rain of white glowing metal shards that folded many of the nearest buzzing starfighters in on themselves and lifted the tail of the battle cruiser, uprighting at 90 degrees before any stabilizing jets could halt the roll. Nome Anor and Shock to Nocton drifted away in their shell, caught by Romamul's gravity and pulled along the planet's rim. When they were far enough from the Mediator so that they wouldn't be detected, Shock blew the shell apart with laser cannons, and off they streaked in the modified A-Wing around the other side of the planet, confident that Commander Akdul and his crew had too much to handle in just securing the rest of their ship to even notice their departure. They made the jump to light speed soon after, leaving Romamul far behind. Nome Anor had pushed the conflict past the breaking point, beyond any hopes of peaceful resolution, and so his duty there was finished. Let them think he had died in the explosion on the Mediator, a martyr to the cause. Let the roused rabble he had left behind on Romamul die eagerly. He was still considering the beauty of his plan and his faked ending when the A-Wing came back to sublight hours later. Shock to Nocton was fast asleep in the pilot chair in front of and just below Nome Anor, breathing rhythmically, contentedly. The coordinates had already been entered, and the A-Wing was flying itself to the next destination, the next spot where Noam Anor could stir up the passions of the oppressed, could cause havoc to the New Republic, and keep the fools so consumed by the civil wars and unrest among their own that they would not turn their eyes outward to the fringes of the galaxy, where far more dangerous trouble was beginning to stew. The Osarian-Romamul conflict would explode fully now, he knew, and the New Republic Advisory Council would send in half the fleet to intervene and keep the warring planets at bay, while the councillors spent countless hours fretting over petty details, with half of them, no doubt, trying to find some way in which they might personally profit from the disaster. Noam Anor worked hard to keep his personal disdain for the New Republic government from clouding his vision and allowing him to grow too optimistic. The Praetorite Vong, the Yuuzhan Vong war force that had come in to assist in the conquest of the galaxy, was not overwhelmingly large by any means, and they couldn't afford to underestimate their opponents at any turn. He looked to Shock for a moment, making sure that the man was asleep, then reached into a case at the side of his cramped seat and produced Dagara's sympathetic villip. In mere moments, the creature inverted to show the head of the prefect, complete with his starfish breather. "How goes Yeoman Carr's operation?" Noam Anor asked after the polite and formal greetings. And he was glad to be speaking again in the more comfortable Yuuzhan Vong tongue.
"Belkaden is dead to our enemies," Dagara assured him. "Yeoman Carr remains there, my newest eyes in this region of the galaxy."
"He has turned the station's satellite scopes to our advantage, then?" Noam Anor asked.
"Indeed, Executor," Dagara said. "Or he will, as soon as the storms pass. We are far from blind, though, for the war coordinator scans the nearby sectors."
"And are you pleased by what the war coordinator sees?" Noam Anor asked.
"This region is sparsely populated," Dagara answered, a twinge of regret in his voice. "The war coordinator's observations, along with the previous reports, prove that there will be little resistance while we gain a foothold."
Noam Anor nodded his approval and relief. The Praetorite Vong would be vulnerable for a while, with only the one frozen planet as a true base. There was great advantage in using a war coordinator, a Yamask, for the attack. In addition to its own powerful energies, and true to its title as war coordinator, the creature could bring the forces of the three expeditionary world ships into tight focus and purpose, could allow the coral skippers to fly in perfect unison, thus making them many times more efficient. But there was a downside to such an endeavor, for if the New Republic somehow managed to bring all of their considerable firepower to bear on that frozen base planet, and, impossible as it seemed, managed to destroy the Yamask, the resulting chaos among the Praetorite Vong could bring about complete disaster. The Praetorite Vong had to move slowly at first, allowing the Yamask to put all the base defenses in place, and to allow for the arrival of the next two fighter-packed world ships.
"Have you selected your next target?" he asked.
"Cern Pedal," Dagara replied. "Third planet of the Julevian system, and the most heavily populated planet of the entire sector."
"An ambitious step."
"But the largest threat to us," Dagara explained. "The Yamask has been watching them, and is not secure in their too common atmospheric breaches, nor in the multitude of communications transmissions emanating from the surface."
"If you are to be discovered, it will likely come from there," Noam Anor agreed.
"We will try to do it quietly," Dagara explained. "Perhaps through plague. Perhaps similar to the molecular disaster Yeoman Carr exacted upon Belkaden, though defeating outgoing communications from a planet as advanced as Cern Pedal will prove no easy task, nor will the task of keeping our enemies on world for the course of the destruction. The war coordinator's own calculations put the former at 7.3-1 against our success, and no better than 1-1 concerning the latter, even if we bring two full complements of coral skippers to bear."
Noam Anor spent a long while considering those odds, and as he grew uneasy about the chances, though still agreeing that Cern Pedal had to be dealt with promptly,
he turned his thoughts in a different direction.
It must be something that does not directly connect an invasion, and certainly that does not reveal the scope of even our portion of the invading force, he said.
He considered again the problems immediately facing the New Republic Advisory Council, and the firepower they would now have to employ close to the core of their galaxy to prevent complete catastrophe.
But not quiet, he explained.
No, let us destroy Cernpadal and kill as many enemies as possible. But let us use this disaster to lure some of our enemies' warships out to us.
Taken in full, the New Republic fleet could possibly cause trouble for the Praetorite Vong. But if we can bring them out little by little, they will prove of no consequence.
Not quiet? Prefect Dagara echoed skeptically.
But not revealing, Nome Anor replied.
Another long pause ensued, both considering the problem at hand. Then the villop in front of Nome Anor correctly reflected the eager light that came into the prefect's eye.
Yogan's core? Dagara asked.
The suggestion caught Nome Anor by surprise, and he almost dismissed it out of hand as preposterous. But he took the time to think about it, honestly considering the possibility. Yogand was a legendary general among the Yuuzhan Vong, the one most often given credit for turning the tide in the Kremlevian War, and thus uniting the various Yuuzhan Vong tribes in generations long past. His core tactics had proven a decisive blow in that long-ago conflict, destroying Igzir, the home planet of the most powerful tribe, and killing nearly all of the obstinate leaders in one fell swoop. Yogand had utilized the power of a strong Dovin Basil, the same gravity-focusing creature now used to propel world ships and other craft, by dropping it to the surface of Igzir, where it focused one beam to latch on to the planet's core, the other to grab at the passing moon. Since the destruction of Igzir, Nome Anor's people had learned to easily counter the attack, but these infidels, without understanding of the extra-galactic creatures, and without the countering powers of other Dovin Basils, would have no way to determine the source of impending disaster, and they would not have the firepower to defeat it. Nor would the New Republic investigative teams figure out the true source, or the power behind it. Not until it was far too late.
Make your noise, Prefect Dagara, Nome Anor said. Destroy Cernpadal and plan your expansion. I will await your call.
What?
A bleary-eyed Choktanocton asked, coming awake groggily. Nome Anor's villop inverted to its unremarkable state and replaced it in his bag.
The call, Nome Anor replied. The call of the oppressed, begging mercy from the uncaring counselors of the New Republic.
Preparing your next speech? Choktanocton asked.
Nome Anor smiled. Indeed, he would soon be doing exactly that. His next speech to rouse the rabble, and then his next. But soon, he knew, his speech would be one of conquest, an ultimatum to the New Republic to accede to the demands of their new masters or be utterly destroyed.